Michael.
Thank you, sir.
Is ready?
Michael's ready. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education for, thankfully it's on here, Tuesday, February 27th. We have two items on our work session agenda today, and we're going to start with a work session on House Bill 4053A relating to accelerated college credit programs. So we have at least one person who would like to speak, but let's start with a staff summary.
Madam Chair.
Those members who would like to speak can move forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4053 directs the Chief Education Office in collaboration with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to prepare an annual report on accelerated college credit programs by December 1st, 2018. And then after June 30th, 2019, the Higher Education Coordinating Commission becomes the entity which is responsible for producing the report. The Higher Education Coordinating Commission must also adopt statewide standards for public post-secondary institutions of education to make information related to accelerated college credit programs available on each institution's website. Online, there is an A6 amendment, which clarifies that the bill is not intended to override a higher education education institution's ability to prescribe educational programs or courses of study. The recommended amendment is an A7, which includes the language from the A6 and also contains a $175,276 general fund appropriation to the HEC.
Okay, colleagues, would you, lovely to have you both here. Thank you for coming to speak about this and take
good morning, everyone.
It's good
to be here. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, members of the Subcommittee on Education. For the record, I am Jeff Reardon, State Representative for District 48, which includes Southeast Portland, Clackamas, Happy Valley, and a former high school teacher at both Park Rose and David Douglas. So, anyway, in the 2017 session, the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee conceived House Bill 2998, which directed alignment of transfer credits between community colleges and public universities. So we did this because students were left with the burden of essentially paying for the same class twice while the process lacked transparency. So House Bill 4053 is kind of in the same vein. It's to address affordability and increase transparency. So the state and the students are investing in accelerated learning courses up front and losing those investments on the back end. This bill would generate a report that will identify how many high school students are taking the courses and what colleges and universities are accepting the credits for these courses. I'll let the experts describe the current amendments and how it will help protect these investments, and do support House Bill 4053. I'm seeking Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee your support as well. And so I'll turn it over to my esteemed colleague.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, co-chairs, Senator Monroe and Representative Smith-Warner, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janine Solomon. I am the state representative of House District 30, which represents parts of Banks, North Plains, Hillsborough, and Beaverton. I'm also a former school board member in Hillsborough, and I am here today testifying to request the funding for House Bill 4053. To me, this bill begins to address three very important issues: college affordability, credit transparency, and allows for high school students to have realistic expectations when they enroll in very rigorous classes. As you may know, the average cost of a four-credit class in college is roughly $530. This is not including books or lodging or anything like that. Now, the cost of a class in high school through an accredited program ranges from $30 to $50. That is a savings of $500 per student per class for every college level class that they take in high school. We have a real opportunity to begin to address student loan debt, and that starts with transparency. If schools won't accept the dual credit, then they need to disclose that up front. Students need to be able to make informed decisions as to where they can best invest their dollars at what school. This transparency will allow for students to have a better understanding of what is to expect when they're making their higher education choices. I've heard from students in my district and from across the state. And I think you do have a letter from a student from South Medford High School that articulates this point very well. They're taking these courses and they're not transferring the way that they were told when they were enrolling in the class. And to me, that is just unacceptable. We need to do better than this, and my hope is that this collection of data will show us that we can, how we can best move forward and make it happen. And I just want to thank you so much for this opportunity to testify, and I urge your support of House Bill 4053.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
So to clarify, this bill will establish the kind of the first look at what high schools and colleges are doing now.
Yeah.
So this will be kind of a sample size,
yep,
a sample of that. And then going forward is the idea that HEC will work on with the colleges and universities on establishing standards for acceptance of those credits, or is that another item for the future?
I think that's another item for the future, because we're looking at just right now we're looking at the collection study, and the chief education office is more than ready to take this on, and then it will go on with HEC, and the information will transpire through HEC, because that's the natural pipeline of information, how they work with universities now. So I think that after the first year that HEC will assume that responsibility, and I'm not sure exactly what that will look like. I think the first year we're going to really look at the collection, see, is this an issue? Is this mostly an issue with students that are predominantly underserved in our communities? So we need to first see the data to see what kind of issue this is before we really know how to move forward and address this.
Okay, great. Other questions for these folks?
Yeah, I actually really believe that it is shining light on things that will change behaviors. And currently, there is a real difficulty, and I don't blame the universities, I don't blame any of the people, but the fact that we have this strong belief at the higher education about the how important it is for the staff to have input on what credits count for whatever, and that academic freedom that exists there. Shining a light on it will hopefully get those people to talk to the people at each of the other levels so they can agree all the way through from the beginning, as opposed to wait until they get there and say, oh, didn't quite meet our requirements. Conversation amongst the people in this system has to continue to grow so that people trust each other all the way through the system. And the only way to start having those conversations, in my opinion, is to do something like what this bill does with respect to making sure it shines a light. So what you're saying is, at the end of this process, every university, every community college, will have on their website which courses they accept and which ones they do not, or and how they accept them?
I think that we're looking at, potentially what that will look like. We want to collect the data first and see what kind of issue that we're working with here. Then we'll look to see how we're going to move forward on that.
Okay.
And I think that it is imperative that I appreciate your comments. Thank you so much. I think it is incredibly imperative that this is just work that students deserve. I sat on a student panel recently with the governor, and students were talking about this, and they said, well, what would your peers, older peers, tell you? And one of the students who submitted the letter said, you know what, they're telling me to make sure to check my credits that the college that I go to, because some aren't accepting it all, some may accept it as elective credit. And so we just need to see what the problem is and collect that data so that then we can look how to see moving forward how we can address that.
Just to follow up, I mean, for a guidance counselor at a high school, it is practically impossible. And if you're trying to make courses and students have more rigorous opportunities in high school so they'll be better prepared, then not being able to clearly articulate for that student, depending on where they're going to go and what other schools, the fact that you can find out sometimes that going to an out-of-state school may cost more overall, but the reality is they're going to collect every one of your credits is going to transfer when you go to that school, and it's going to count, is important information for a student making a decision. And it has been exceedingly frustrating in my 35-year career in education, or 32-year career, to not be able to look a student in the face and tell them when they take an AP course or an IB course or whatever, that's going to help them when they go to college. Because in some cases, it hurts them, because they end up with a bunch of credits, and it hurts the fact that they can get other kinds of loans and stuff, because they move through credit-wise faster than they have on their majors, and that is really a frustrating situation, and counselors need to have the ability to talk to kids and explain things and not be fooled later on. So I thank you for the bill.
If I can respond, thank you, Senator Roblin and Representative Smith Warner and Senator Monroe. I would like to also say that, you know, we also understand that, you know, my son went to a high school in Hillsboro, and he had 25 college credits. And when he enrolled at a university in Oregon, Western Oregon University, he received all 25 credits. As they were. So I think that for him, that was an incredible savings. And I think it's really important that we look to see, you know, where this issue is and how we can best address it for students, because his story is unfortunately becoming more unique than it is a norm.
Thank you. And thank you both. Ma'am? I would like, oh, sorry, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I've taught dual credit classes for many years. It's really important. We passed Measure 98. We know that students that are taking dual credit classes are more likely to graduate on time. So it's a good thing. But the frustration is, first of all, there's a frustration with school districts in terms of how you certify a teacher as being college prep ready, in other words, qualified to teach college level classes. How do you do that? That's a question we're asking and we're working on. Secondly, why do some colleges accept dual credit classes, AP or whatever it be? There's different, I've taught it on different levels, and some don't. And that's frustrating. So, you know, this is something that needs to be sorted out. And getting the information, the data that you'll be collecting with this bill is a good way to start with this. So I really applaud you, both of you, for bringing this before us, and also the big co-chairs for letting us actually hear it and pass it on. Because, as you know, in the Ways and Means system, we can only do what they tell us we can do. So thank you for coming.
Thank you both. I'd like to call up the Chief Ed Office and HEC in case they have any overall comments and in case anybody on the committee has further questions for them.
Representative Smith Warner, Representative Monroe, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps representing the Chief Education Office. We are in support of House Bill 4053 and the amendments before you today. We see this data collection as additive to a process that we have already convened with our K-12 and post-secondary and higher education partners around dual credit that are looking at ways in which we can establish a more systemic approach to accelerated learning across the state, especially as has been noted today with new investment through Measure 98. So we very much appreciate the opportunity to help take data that HEC will collect, provide analysis of that in collaboration with the various partners who are at the table in this conversation, so that we might present back to the legislature a clear sense of the system as it stands and clear recommendations on how we proceed forward.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Hilda, would you mind speaking about how this does or doesn't interact with the work group on accelerated learning that you all have convened already?
Co-Chair Smith Warner and Co-Chair Monroe, thank you for that question. It very much dovetails with the four main areas that the Sustainable Systems for Accelerated Learning Group are working on. And I was so pleased that Senator Monroe raised again the issue of instructor qualifications. We think there are some solutions. We are proposing some pieces that we would bring forward for the 2019 session. We've also identified about 24 states that have a policy on the books for handling credit transfer from dual credit to community college. We're doing not just an analysis of the bills, because as we know, sometimes the bill looks like it works. We actually have an intern who's actually reaching out to every state and asking the good questions about what worked with your bill, what didn't work, what would you do differently, and what lessons would you provide to us as we move forward. So I think this will all come together in a very coherent way.
Great. And then, Kyle, I wanted to give you a chance to give HEX input on this.
Sure. Senator Monroe, Co-Chair Smith Warner, Kyle Thomas, Director of Legislative and Policy Affairs for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. We're similarly excited about this. Generally, when we receive questions that involve matters of transfer of credit, those are always the most difficult for us at HEC to answer. And the reason they're most difficult for us to answer is because we don't have student-level transcript data. Anytime a student moves between a community college and a university, the university accepts whatever credits they accept. And generally, that student's file with the credits that didn't get accepted get tucked away, and we don't see it again. So it becomes part of the reason you see the expense in the bill that you see is that's a labor-intensive process to go through and examine each student's file and match it against what has been accepted and make determinations according to the data that's presented. So that's part of the reason you see a sampling strategy and not a simple study that examines all accelerated learning credit across the system. I think we're also excited about the possibility, as has been previously referenced, to what this can do for policymaking in the future. Accelerated learning credit, as it's expanded in popularity and accessibility, has exceeded the capacity of the state to study and make good education policy around it. And so this is really step one to starting to come to terms with that popularity. I think the combination of the data that's going to be provided here, probably in conjunction with some of the transfer work that's ongoing separate from this bill, is capable of providing quite a bit of focus to students and institutions and schools across the state.
Great. Thank you. And I was going to say, I'd like to assume that some of this data will also be in the statewide longitudinal data system, but instead I think I'm going to say I'd like to request that that going forward this will end up being part of the statewide longitudinal data system. So can you confirm or deny that? Okay. For the record, that was a thumbs up. But I'm assuming is a confirm. So want to make any comment on that, anybody, about the SLDS? No, just that indeed this will be part of, and again, that's another way that will be a tool that we can use in this. And it's, I just want to say about this publicly, as I have thought about the statewide longitudinal data system, it's always been much more of a K-12 focus. And I went to a meeting of Oregon Colleges of Education and had a great conversation there about how much higher ed will be able to use the statewide longitudinal data system as well. And it had not occurred to me. So that was, there's a lot more great prospects in that as well. And to me, this screams one of them. So thank you. Oh, did you want to say something?
Go ahead. Representative Smith Warner, Senator Monroe, I would just commend your comments. I think as we look at the statewide longitudinal data system, it is intended to look at data relative to pathways for students from K-12 through higher ed and into the workforce. So I think there is an opportunity with stronger data collection processes that I think could be undertaken through this bill to make that much more a part of our longitudinal data system. So we're already in conversation with HEC about that. So
thank you.
Appreciate your comments.
Yeah, just a comment on what you had said that I think is really important, and that is that there's a lot of evidence that one of the best indicators of college success is GPA in high school. Mm-hmm. And yet GPA does not follow the kid to the college. Yeah. If they ask for it, they can find it, but it isn't there. And so hopefully the longitudinal database will include things like GPA so they can actually use currently the best indicator we have, which I find interesting since we have all these national tests and all these other state tests and all this other kind of stuff, and yet the grade that a teacher gives over a long period of the high school time is a better indicator of success than all of those others. So maybe we should think that a little bit.
How about that time. Could be another request rather than the data system. Great. Okay. Any
ready
other questions? Yep.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the A7 amendment to House Bill 4053.
Senator Monroe moves the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 4053. Any discussion? Representative Winston?
Thank you. I've been a big supporter of transferability of credits It is maybe a little concerning that we're going to need so many FTEs to do this. Hope technology will eliminate that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Roland?
Again, it shows why that lunch and debit is important. The question that was raised is how many FTE. The reality is every university has to have a half-time person or something to go through the transcripts and find the data. So I don't know how you do it without, because of the way we've collected it, without that FTE. So I agree that it's really sad, and I hope that in the future technology will do exactly what you're saying.
Further discussion? Any objection? Okay, so moved.
And Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 4053 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved House Bill 4053 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, I will just say briefly, while it is troubling how much FTE that's going to take, I also want to acknowledge that HEC is often the agency that we ask to do things without giving sufficient funding, and so I am particularly pleased that we are indeed acknowledging the amount of work this will be and how, and hopefully giving them the resources to be able to do that. So that would be my only comment. So any further discussion? Any objections? Okay, so moved.
Carrier? I'd be happy to carry this to the full committee and to the Senate.
Great. And unless there's a Senate sponsor we should put on it, that would be great. Otherwise, on the floor, is it Representative Reardon or Representative Solman on the House floor? Representative Solman it is, because she had her head turned while we were advocating. Okay. Okay, with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 4053A, and I will open a work session on House Bill 4130.
Co-chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4130 directs the Department of Education to award grants to public school districts for up to 50% of student transportation costs, which are not reimbursed by the state school fund. The State Board of Education must adopt criteria for which applications will be reviewed by. A school district that receives a grant may transfer a portion of the grant to a public charter school. The bill specifies the manner in which grant awards should be determined, and a $250,000 general fund appropriation is appropriated to ODE for the 2017-19 biennium, which must be expended for the grant program. We have a -1 amendment online, and I would call your attention to the second paragraph, which is in the fiscal impact statement, which notes that the Department of Education may have to return to a future e-board to request expenditure limitation or position authority for resources necessary to administer the program once they know how many grant requests we're going to be looking at.
Okay. Representative McEwen, could we ask that you come forward and talk to us a little bit about where this bill came from and just the -1, is that not the A1?
Just -1.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Smith Warner, co-chairs Monroe, Monroe and Smith Warner, members of the committee. My name is Katty McEwen. I represent House District 9, Coos Beta Yahats, down on the South Coast. I was a school board member for many years and had intimate responsibility around student transportation. And when I came into the legislature, one of the things I wanted to work on was trying to bring student transportation into the 21st century. There was a very clear, bright line between yellow buses and other opportunities for students to move around their districts, the goal being student success, attending classes, going to jobs, getting to activities that can be very enriching for them. So about 2 years ago, at the request of a transit organization and a couple of other colleagues of ours, we put together a work group and moved forward with a bill that would provide an opportunity for school districts to apply for money through the Department of Education that could be used beyond our very specific transportation grant money that is distributed through formula to school districts, to blur that line a little bit and give students more options. The bill came in the last session in the end result of trying to pass a transportation package, just kind of got lost in the shuffle. So our group reemerged this session with the same purpose of trying to put a little bit of money aside for school districts
districts to apply for to go beyond that just yellow bus service to give students more opportunity. And so that's what House Bill 4130 does. It creates a fund at the Department of Education with money in it that school districts can apply for to provide. Originally, it was for transit or activity buses for school districts that did not have access to transit. Now, the reason you see a dash one is that we have been successful in partnering with the transportation package that passed in the last session and created a significant source of revenue for transit across the state, which is going to transform how transit is funded. It's about $120 million a year that is going into expand service, expand reach, expand transit opportunities across the state. We were able to tap just a very small percentage of that for districts who can use that for transit. So what the amendment does is remove transit from the original bill. What you see now is focused on just those school districts who do not have access to transit. Mm-hmm. So this is the partner to access to transit. Yellow buses stay the same, but give school districts who do not have transit an opportunity to apply for those funds that are very specific to activity buses or alternative ways for children to be transported around their district, high school students, I guess it's an attempt at fairness now that we've solved the transit problem. So some things have changed since the bill came out. Base bill is the same. A little bit of money at Department of Ed for school districts to offer alternative forms of transportation for kids. Since we've dealt with the transit issue in the transportation package, this just focuses on the school districts now that do not have access to transit.
Okay, so let me ask you two quick things about that. So on the transit part, is the idea that because of the increased transit funding that we did in the most excellent transportation package last year, mm-hmm. thank you for your work on that, so is the premise that school districts, because there is more transit, the school districts can now access that directly through the transit agency, hence the taking it out of this part as an option?
In the current transportation bill that we will be moving tomorrow night, we were able to amend it to say that transit entities who are receiving grant money through the STIF, mm-hmm. the distribution that's coming through the employee tax, 1% of that money must be addressing student transit issues. So they have to have a conversation with their local school districts now. So what we added in that bill is there will be an advisory committee formed. There will be a member of education, the school districts, on that advisory team. When the grant money is awarded to the transit district, they need to reach out to those school districts that they serve. And by and large, most districts, unless they're very, very small, 1% of that transit money will be dedicated to student transportation. So we address that in the transportation bill.
Okay.
So what happened when we did that is we decoupled our transportation bill we were trying to pass for student transportation. Now this deals with the districts that aren't fortunate enough to be subject to that award that will come through their transit entities, their transit districts.
Great. And then just to clarify, is this for high schools only?
9 through 12.
Okay.
It's limited to grades 9 through 12.
Okay. Hence the activity buses, because the idea is that less of a need or a something of K-8.
And we want to give them flexibility in how they use this money. We have school districts who used to have activity buses. They do their regular yellow bus run, and then later in the day they do a run for those kids that lived far out. Those have gone by the wayside. Maybe you have a group of students who need to stay after school for some reason, for choir or band or forensics, or they need to stay after because they're working on a robotics project or whatever, and they don't have any way to get home and they live 15 miles away. Gives them some flexibility to provide those opportunities for kids for enrichment. Another example, if you have a high school that has students who are taking advantage of the expanded options program and they're going to their community college to take classes, they don't have a way to get there. Maybe the school district partners to get a small vehicle to get a group of kids out to the community college 3 days a week so they can take advantage of the college opportunities that they have to save them money in the long run so that they don't have to borrow so much money when they go off. Maybe they can graduate with an associate degree or enough credit to help them with 1 year. This is meant to be very flexible about how that high school can best use that to provide opportunities for student success. The end result of all of this, and it always has been since the initial idea was developed, that this is all about giving kids options that provide them greater opportunity for student success.
Great, thank you. And then I do feel the need to point out, so after I asked you that, it was pointed out that indeed this amendment, the A1 amendment, does delete the line limiting it to high schools. And I'm, as the proponent, I wanted to make sure you knew that as well.
I did not.
And so,
and if that's something we need to come back and clean up, we'll be happy to do that.
Right. Yeah. So, which I mean, I could make the argument for taking it out, but it's not my bill, so I won't do that.
Co-chair Smith Warner, there has been there was a discussion about changing
about
the age level to middle school. There was some pushback on that, so we just decided to move forward with grades 9 through 12 the way the original bill was designed. That is something we could have conversations about at a later date. This subject may come back up, but if there's a fix to be made, we can do it later.
But you are comfortable with the limitation to high school?
I am.
Being deleted?
Not being deleted.
Because it is deleted in this amendment.
Then that's something that we will need to address.
So,
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, I think that might have been a Scrivener's error. That may have been a Scrivener's error.
It certainly could be. Things are moving very fast,
yes,
Madam Co-Chair.
Indeed. Okay, let me see if there's any other questions. Representative Senator Roblin.
Yeah, just a comment. I think this is really important for those small districts to figure out ways in which they can make more accessibility to the program. The thing that I think is we need to understand as a group, $250,000 is very little money when you're looking at probably 16 or 17 million for the other places. There's a lot more kids there, so we think it can work. I'm hopeful that as we get all of the requests in, and especially if we're limiting it to high school, which I agree with, we're going to find out what that looks like, because I don't think we've even thought of all the reasons why school districts are going to come up with wanting a grant. And then at the end of this next year, and the reason that there's that comment about they may need more people to look at all the grants, we'll have a better idea of what that scope looks like. And once we know that, maybe we can come back and have a conversation once this fund is developed to look at having the amount of money that they really need for those small districts to answer a lot of those questions. But I really like this vote, so.
Thank you.
And I don't know how we go about getting the change made.
Okay. So thank you very much, Representative McEwen. Let's stand at ease for a moment.
Sure.
And if you want to come forward and we can kind of discuss that. So do I have to hit to stand at ease?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. We're going to stand at ease.
So what are we going to do?
Okay. We will return to order, and we were in a work session for House Bill 4130 relating to student transportation. Colleagues and proponent, the discussion has been, and I'm going to have Krista clarify this for the record, but the discussion has been, we believe there was a Scrivener's error in the -1 amendment that had a deletion of a series of lines, start one line early, and therefore inadvertently deleting a line about limiting this to 9 to 12. So Krista's going to walk through our solution for this.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, what the committee could do is adopt a conceptual amendment. And this conceptual amendment would include the -1 amendment. However, on line 5 of the -1 amendment, where it says delete lines 18 through 28, instead, we will have this change to delete lines 19 through 28. Therefore, this conceptual amendment would restore line 18 in the bill, which states that students grades 9 through 12 are the ones responsible for the grant program. And then what will happen after the committee adopts this conceptual amendment, I'll go talk to LC, we'll get an actual physical amendment with probably a -2 number that will reflect the changes that the committee intends to adopt here today. And then by the time it goes to full Ways and Means, we will have a real amendment when it goes to full Ways and Means.
Will we need to adopt that amendment? Will we need to adopt that amendment? Okay, hang on just a second. Can we stand at ease, please? So we're going to come back to order. Colleagues, what we're going to do is we are going to we're going to close this work session on House Bill 4130, and we are going to get a corrected amendment drafted, which we will then repost, and we will reconvene this committee later today to hear that correct and accurate amendment.
So are we recessing until the...
Yeah. We are recessing until a time certain. This time uncertain this afternoon. So,
at the call of the chair.
We're not a closed committee.
At the call of the chair.
Ways and Means is not a closed committee.
Not yet.
Open, so.
Well, they're.
Yes.
They do close it sometimes.
Yes.
Before.
The subs get closed at some point.
Yeah, but I don't think today's the day for subs being
correct.
Closed.
Yeah.
So,
that was my understanding as well.
Get it right.
Okay. So with that, the work session is closed, or do we need to keep the work session open?
It's recessed.
So, thank you. The work session is recessed, and today's meeting is
recessed.
No, let's just reverse it.
I don't know.
Well done. Good afternoon, colleagues. I call to order, reconvene this meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education for Tuesday, February 27th. When we last met, we had gone on hold in the midst of a work session on House Bill 4130. So I'm just going to gavel again to reopen that work session on House Bill 4130. And I believe that LFO has something to introduce for us.
Yes, Madam Chair, House Bill 4130, this is the one that directs Department of Education to award grants to public school districts for student transportation costs that are not reimbursed by the state school fund. We now have on OLIS a -2 amendment, which is the new recommended amendment. And it does the previous change, same changes as what was in the -1. However, it restores that the program only applies for grades 9 through 12. So it'll read that transportation costs that are not covered by the state school fund must be incurred by the district for the provision of transportation to students in grades 9 through 12. That's how that line will read with the amendment.
Okay. Can I have a motion on that amendment, please?
Madam Co-Chair, I move the -2 to HB 4130.
Thank you. Senator Thompson has moved the -2 amendment to House Bill 4130. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, so moved. I will entertain another amendment. Senator Monroe. Sorry, Senator Thompson.
No, I was going to say, does the group want to approach the dais to make sure they don't spill coffee on you this time?
That's my water bottle is tightly closed.
Madam Co-Chair, yes. I move House Bill 4130 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Monroe has moved House Bill 4130 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved. We now need a carrier to the full committee, which I guess I'll do. And Representative McEwen to the House floor.
And I'll take it to the Senate.
And Senator Monroe to the Senate floor.
Madam Co-Chair, I might ask Representative Lackey, who started out on this venture very early on, would you like to co-carry, sir?
Thank you.
Okay, how about if we co-carry McEwen and Lively?
Sounds good.
Very good. If there's no further work before the committee, and I don't believe there is, although I will confirm that with all of the LFO staff. Okay, with that, the work session for 4130 is adjourned.
And thank all of you for the good work this session. I appreciate this committee. Every person on this committee has been very helpful. We will see you all at Ledge Days in May.
That's right. And with that, no end of session committee parties this time. Sorry, okay. People. But thank you all for your service. And this, as far as we know, ends is our last subcommittee meeting, as far as we know. With that, we are adjourned.
I don't know, the workload wasn't exactly overwhelming, but...